I really cannot.
Last week's episode about Greg Mlarek, that piece of shit. You know what I was realizing while I was editing that? Did he not make it sound like he was told by his wife, hey, we're out of milk, I'm going to get milk?
Yeah.
When you listen to that 911 call, he doesn't know where she went. He doesn't know what she's doing. He doesn't know what direction she's coming from. He doesn't know a goddamn thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
The milk part was filled in later, but we have physical proof that day of, milk was not on the 911 call.
Where would she be coming from?
I have no idea. She left and she didn't say where she was going.
Wow, good catch.
Well, thank you, but too bad it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Greg's listening to this episode right now, laughing his ass off, going, doesn't matter, dude. I'm free. Doesn't matter what you find.
Depressing.
But good news, Caitlin. We've got an outcome here for this episode that ends up a little differently.
Mm-hmm. I'm Lester Holt.
Howdy, Holdheads. Kurt Money here, alongside my co-host,
Caitlin.
All right, let's hop into this. Before I get your thoughts, Caitlin, I'm going to hit you with, as promised, the KMDB description. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A bomb goes off at a California spa, killing 48-year-old Ildiko Krania. Was it a jilted ex-lover, or was it a soccer mom slash part-time assassin? Let's find out.
Okay.
Do you remember the soccer mom? Part-time assassin? Do you remember that part?
No.
Okay, wait, then we'll put a pin in that. First things first, we got an episode hosted by Jay Mank.
Here's Josh Mankiewicz with Death at the Spa.
What did you think of Death at the Spa?
I liked this one. It was new to me, and I felt like it was one of those episodes where people made some really dumb choices.
Yeah.
Like everybody.
Yeah, and they love to give the suspect a hard time about it, although I'm not sure they're wrong about his motives, I think. So I'm eager to get your take on that. But they really loved, like, they got this guy's number, and I think they're missing something very obvious. But let's wait a little bit. Although, I mean, when did you know who did it? Minute one? Minute two? Minute two and a half?
Let's see, when did I know?
I mean, the person it ends up being almost is challenging you to say, I dare you to not think it's me. I dare you.
I think it was during his interrogation that I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
And what an interrogation.
Yeah.
I mean, so wait, I had a little fun there with the description, but a basic thing is a bomb goes off at a California day spa, and it was this 48-year-old woman named Ildiko, which is, I think, our coolest name across the board. She's up there with Kevin Klim for cool names. Ildiko, I've never heard before in my life.
Ildiko is Hungarian. That's a Hungarian name. It's very cool.
Very cool.
When Ildiko and her husband, Ranilo Vastil, met, Ildiko had recently moved to the U.S. from her native Hungary.
She was married for 22 years, had a son in college, married to the same guy, but there were a number of other guys.
She was married to the same man. That was the only thing consistent.
She just wanted to be loved, and she loved attention from men.
Her husband's not one of those men.
No.
I don't even know how many boyfriends she had over those 22 years, but at the time of her death, there were like 5 or 6 other men orbiting her. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And we come to find out that it's kind of an open secret. Her friends all know. Her husband most likely does know too.
Does he? Is he a sap? Is he a stooge? Do they really have an agreement? I'm not sure there was an agreement, though. I feel like he maybe accepted it years ago that Ildiko liked to knock them boots and he can't keep up, I think.
Maybe, but there was that moment where we heard something. What was it? Somebody reached out to him to tell him and he was like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah.
That's on you, man. Like, he knew that she was running around.
It's because there's an angry wife of someone that Ildiko is sleeping with. The Ildiko kept sleeping with, kept having these back and forth. So, like, when this bomb goes off and the cops are looking into Ildiko, they find out that there are 5 or 6 men in her life that are potential culprits. Like, there are a few angles to go. And this one with this couple, Elizabeth and Gabor Paps was her last name. I thought J-Mank was trying to be cute about paparazzi. No, these guys' last name is Paps. The Paps arrived.
You're talking to the Paps about their relationship with Ildiko.
Well, Elizabeth was the one that they were looking at closely because she had sent threats. And also, she was the one who reached out to Ildiko's husband, and he didn't care.
No, and she goes, and she's like, yo, you gotta get your woman in check, dude. It's basically what she's saying.
Be a man.
Be a man. Classic stuff.
Really? You're so blind that accept what your wife is doing instead of stepping up. Be a man.
He was basically like, this is more of a you problem.
Yeah.
Like, get your husband in line. I don't care.
Yeah. His only response is, have you tried blocking her on Facebook? Oh, thanks, dude. And she goes, really? That's all you're going to say? He just didn't give a shit.
He didn't care. There's something to be said after 22 years, though. It's just like, it's a partnership more than anything.
Yeah, and like, I guess I'm not here to judge whatever their setup was. I guess I want to know before I make my own opinions. But like you're saying, they've got a kid in college. They've been married for 2 decades. Maybe it's a system that works for them.
Exactly.
You know?
They could divorce if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the only partner in her life. She also had a business partner. And
well, and that business, the word business partner is in the biggest of quotes. Am I right? I mean, that...
Well, sure. The day spa was all her. It was her salon. She was the employee there. They were all her clients.
What's an esthetician? I thought that is somebody who like puts you under for work. Is that not?
That's an anesthesiologist. An esthetician does facials.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's why J-Mac was relating it to like a hairdresser relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's facials. I think she did brows and lashes too. He just helped her, I think, pay for the space in the office building.
He just offered his name to put on the lease for like credit or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like he's just being the clueless sugar daddy position. Like he's not helping her run that business. He's dating her desperate for any way to keep her around. And he's like, oh, I'll get my name on her lease and I'll really stick around. Right? Like I don't think that was like, I don't think he had day-to-day dealings with the business. Do you?
No, not at all. Unless he did the books.
He didn't. And actually, all right, well, let's talk about it. There's a lot of suspects that we hear about. There's a handyman named Max that has a key that can get inside. Like, there's all these things that are like, oh, might be this.
The Paps, particularly Elizabeth, were dismissed too quickly as possible suspects, said the defense, as was Max the handyman, who had full access to Ildiko's suite.
But there's one man in her life that we got to take a closer look at. Stephen Beal.
Stephen indicated he knew Ildiko well because he was Ildiko's ex and helped her manage the spa.
Stephen Beal is a guy, he's like late 50s when they meet. They meet on like a dating website. I don't know. We don't know which one it was, but they swipe right on each other. Tell us about their relationship, Caitlin.
He knew that she was married and... He suggested that he knew that he wasn't the only guy, but I don't think that's true. I think...
There's no f***ing way. He was clueless.
He wanted to be with her. They dated probably casually for a little bit. He puts his name on the lease.
Idiot.
Then...
she says, oh, that's funny. Here's your walking papers. Bye-bye.
She clearly broke things off.
Yeah.
And he almost immediately starts dating another woman that he met on the dating site.
And we'll talk about her.
Which I think was a distraction so that people wouldn't think he was the one who sent the bomb. But I think he was. And he was a rocket enthusiast. So Stephen had...
Among many... Many.
Among many other things, he was a rocket enthusiast, and he had all the things you need to build a bomb right in his garage. So the cops, immediately the day of the bombing, went to his house because they thought he might be a target if the business itself was a target. And he had some packages on the doorstep, and they said, can we check them for a possible bomb? And he's all, oh, absolutely, yes. And the packages did not have bombs in them. But they did find...
Maybe that's why he's being so helpful and descriptive. They're all to the left, stacked, stack of three, blah, blah, blah.
Right as you open the door, the packages are to the left. There's three and they're in a stack.
But they did find in his garage lots of bomb-making supplies.
We find that out through his interrogation tape when he's like, rocket-making materials that could be suspicious. And you're like, what? Rocket what?
I don't know what's in my garage. I don't know what chemicals they found.
And then we see pictures, and he did make rockets at some point. So, I mean, that could be...
He even had a YouTube channel talking about how to build them.
Okay, first of all, that was... This sounds like I'm being a stickler. It was on Vimeo. It's not like he had a YouTube account where he's like, what's up, y'all? Today we're doing this. Like, this was like a secret video he made about, like, stuffing bomb so it doesn't blow up when you're making it. Like, that felt more intentional. to me or something.
Who did he make that video for then?
Who f***ing knows? But it was clearly they mocked it up with fake stuff and they gave him 4 likes. I've made so many fake like YouTube screens for edits and stuff, and I'm always putting in my own personal opinion on what the likes and dislikes are. And I just know there's an editor, somebody in Dateline, cracking up, giving him 4 likes or 4 views or whatever.
3 of those likes are his mom.
Yeah.
The advantage of this method is that even if you're using highly sensitive materials, this is extremely gentle and will not cause the formulation to spark or self-ignite.
Okay, so now this is when, so you remember when Steven's house is being searched, Jay Mink like throws to a clip where he's like, a local news team caught the action, okay? And I'm gonna send you the clip of what they played. And I just got a lot of questions for you, so here we go.
News chopper captured the scene.
Okay, good. Oh, got them bringing stuff out. Ooh. There we go. I'm gonna follow him, Aldo, with the package.
Caitlin, why'd they play that audio?
They did that newscaster dirty, that's why.
Real f***ing dirty. That was clearly inner monologue of her just talking to the cameraman.
To the producers, yes.
Yes! Saying like, yes, that's a good shot. Get that for later. These f***ers played it on live TV! Why?
Yeah, you can't do that. Well, at least, I don't know if it went live, but Dateline certainly played it.
You're right, it wasn't live. Dateline found that in the raw and was like, this is the section of this footage that we're gonna air on Dateline NBC. I cannot believe that they gave it sound for her to go, ooh, yeah, yeah, that's it. That's the good one. Like that, I wonder if that newscaster was watching this going like, what the f***? J-Mink, what's up, dude?
Mortifying.
Oh, and also, okay, I'm going to do a little side-by-side, so maybe I won't be right on this. But goddammit, if when I hear that lady go, ooh, yeah, I'm thinking of the early 2000s hottie who worked with the Gilgo Beach serial killer. Remember her when she was like, there he is, there's the guy, got him.
Yep.
They sound alike, okay? So anyway, I'm just gonna play them together and that'll be cool.
Okay, good. Oh, got them bringing stuff out. Ooh.
Got him, my colleague, right there.
So they go to his house to look into that, but Stephen Beale's appearance at the station and Stephen Beale's 10-hour monologue that he performed, that was all his idea.
Mm-hmm.
He walked into the jail and said, you're gonna want to talk to me eventually. I'm the lover. I'm Ildiko's lover. You're gonna want to know what I got to say. I mean, that's pretty stupid, huh? What do you think?
Everything he said in that interview was stupid. He...
Let's break it down.
We learned that not only is he a rocket enthusiast, he is an actor.
Oh!
And we should put that in quotes, too.
Yes! And they did, too. They loved pointing out, and Jay Mink, it's so good. They're like, he spent more money, like, trying to be an actor than he ever did getting gigs. And Jay Mink's like,
he spent more money getting classes and lessons than he did ever making any money from acting.
Welcome to showbiz.
Yeah.
It's like bingo,
yeah,
Jay Mink.
To be fair, I think that is probably more common than not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they show clips of him acting, and it's hella bad.
Okay, it is. But we're also watching... Look, it was bad, but we're watching that as a suspected murderer, as a wannabe actor who's in his 60s and hasn't made it as an actor. I feel like we're predisposed to think it sucked. Do you think he could have acted in such a way that you would say he just needs to find his break?
Yes.
You think so?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In that scenario where the FBI's in the audience, it's like a black box theater presentation of 12 Angry Jurors. Like, you think they could have played a clip where you'd have been like, oh, he's got it. Stephen Beale's got
it. I was thinking more of the video clips we saw of him in some short films.
Oh, yes. Okay. Then I take it all back because, yes, those were atrocious.
Theater is theater, and community theater is also community theater. And that can only be so good. But those videos, painful.
How many more people are going to have to die before you do something useful?
So painful. And this is, it doesn't happen enough to make a list, and I'm not even ready to call it a subgenre, but more than once, an actor or a wannabe musician or poet or whatever will show up on a Dateline, and it'll always be so delightful because you know that you're going to hear a little excerpt of their stuff. Okay. And Stephen's stuff is all over this episode. I mean, later in the trial, they play a poem that he wrote for Ildiko, but that he also recorded himself performing.
I love how when I dream of my life partner, the only person that I can see is you.
There's a lot to unpack with Mr. Stephen Beale, because not only is he an actor, and we see his reel, and he's reading from a script, mind you, and he's saying, he's so stupid, he goes, I believe that actors should also have a life. And then he says the most cliche sentence ever, but rewritten it as his words. He goes,
I believe, though, that an actor has to have a life outside of the camera. Art illuminates life, but also life illuminates art.
Yes.
And like, that's his takeaway as an actor.
I don't think he knows what reels look like. You don't do that in a reel.
A reel is not for you to pontificate about acting as a process. That's for nobody but you, dude.
What was up with his eyes?
They were weird, right? It was almost like his eyelids were tied a little shut on the sides, right?
Yeah. And it made his eyeballs look kind of bulbous.
Bulbous. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm one to talk.
What?
I've got some bulbous eyeballs, too.
Okay, so he goes into this interrogation, which is 10 hours. They play us a highlight reel, and there's some great stuff in here. And, like, everything he said is also something that he's forced his friends or mother to hear as well, because it was all pre-written stuff. Like, when he was talking about how, you know, you just get to a point in life when you wake up singing Carole King's so-and-so-and-so, and he, like, names some deep-cut Carole King song, then you know you're in trouble. Like, it was all shit like that, where it's like, you wrote that in your diary, bro.
You know, when you wake up in the morning and you're humming the Carole King song, One of Us is Changing, or maybe we just stop trying it, you know something is amiss.
And he's looking at the cops like, you know what I mean? And they're like, can we go?
Yes. Yeah, they are. And again, they're leaning away from him. Right? I mean, they are straight up like, They're not being receptive whatsoever. So often, the body language of an interrogation tape is two or one burly detectives sitting way too close to someone who's talking to their lap. And it's like they're crowding him so that they feel that he's cornered and has to answer. Not old Stephen Beal. He's got an audience and he's performing. Okay? He's performing his ass off. And the body language of his crowd is they want to be out of there. They want to be anywhere but there.
The whole interview is odd to me from the beginning.
Because why is he there?
Right.
We did talk to the bald guy. Now, this guy was such a zero wet blanket, zero sense of humor. Look, it's good. He's in law enforcement. I don't need him to be a cut up, okay? But I just love that Stephen Beal thought he was connecting with this guy in that room. Because this guy wasn't getting anything he was putting down. You think a guy knows who the f*** Carole King is for one? For one?
It was probably one of his most receptive audiences, though.
You're right, because they're listening for him to slip up. You're right. This is the most anyone has ever paid attention to him. That's a great point.
Yeah, he is holding court. He is leaning back on that chair. He's got his leg up.
Oh.
He is just riffing for 10 hours straight.
Yep.
Lock him up.
Unusual? Yes.
And Stephen will not shut up in this interview. Not only is he an actor, he's also a magician.
Red flag.
He did the coin behind the ear.
He pulled a coin out of the cop's ear. Lock him up. Lock him up.
He did the pull a coin from behind my ear kind of trick.
You're kidding me.
No, I was blown away.
What an idiot!
How to misread the current situation to the point where you're going to do hijinks. Someone is dead.
Yeah.
Two people are critically injured. We don't even know how bad their injuries are.
Yeah.
A bomb? They could have lost a limb.
Yeah.
And he's doing magic.
Yeah, and the most cliche, like, trick for a four-year-old ever.
The interview had veered into some truly bizarre territory.
We're finally to the part that I was maybe dying the most at. He tells them about a screenplay that he is writing about a soccer mom / part-time assassin. And they play a little clip of him pitching them.
Stephen told them about a screenplay he was writing about a soccer mom who was a part-time assassin.
Now, she's very good. She plans every step of the way. She covers her tracks.
Now, we got a little taste of the pitch, but I don't know about you, Caitlin, but I feel like that is maybe 20 seconds of a 10-minute pitch. I mean, he was in the middle of that pitch, right?
You think he did the whole thing for them?
Of course he did. He's pulling coins out of their ears. He gave them the whole spiel. Oh.
It's not an original idea.
Why? Are you already familiar with a movie about a soccer mom who's also a part-time assassin?
Isn't that's Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Well, yeah, for one. There you go.
Although, they don't have kids.
No, but, I mean, look, the idea is what it is. I'm sure if he's actually written the script, it's terrible. Do you think the script is written? Or do you think all he has is this elevator pitch? Or interrogation room pitch?
He has not written a word of it. He goes around saying he has this great idea for a show. Let me pitch it to you.
Yeah.
Never written a word.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to know who his dream get is. Because you know it's got to be somebody like Lonnie Anderson. Or somebody like, I mean, how long has he been sitting on this idea? Who does he cast as that soccer mom?
Someone who's a grandmother?
Yeah, I don't know. I could just see him casting like some babe from like 70s or 80s TV.
So is that how long he's had the idea?
Yeah. Hey, maybe it is original then.
She plans every step of the way. She covers her tracks.
He also says something truly bizarre that he and his girlfriend have been talking about when this is all over.
Yes.
He needs to write a one-man stand-up routine about this because there is often comedy in dark situations.
She said, you know, you need to do a stand-up comedy routine about it. You know, if the audience can relate to what you're going through and it's delivered in a, you know, humorous manner.
That was the lowest point for me. Any time I'm in with an earshot of someone saying how their life deserves to be in a stand-up comedy routine, I want to wrinkle up and die. I can't stand it. It makes my skin crawl, and I want to get out of there as soon as I can. I'm sure you can relate to this, Caitlin.
Do you hate it more than improv?
It's kind of like the same beast, and improv at least has rules, and whether or not they're annoying is okay. There's something particularly evil about the person that thinks they should be a stand-up comedian, but they should not be a stand-up comedian, right?
Yeah.
And I just think, like, look, I love making people laugh too. It's a great feeling, but there's something about hearing people talk about that. I don't know. There's just something real sad about Stephen Beale and Groanworthy.
It's desperation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we find out about his acting gig because they're looking into his background, and the way he makes money is by scamming the government.
Mm-hmm.
Is he says he has aphasia, which is like it makes it difficult to read and process words in an order or something.
He'd been on disability for more than a decade because, Stephen said, he suffered from aphasia, difficulty communicating, memory loss, and an inability to read.
But then there he is memorizing hours worth of dialogue for some community theater.
And oh my God, the fact that the FBI went to a production just to see him so that they could go, hey, he memorized the script to this piece of shit. The FBI was there. That's really funny.
It is.
So when Stephen was cast in the play 12 Angry Jurors, the FBI was in the audience.
He was able to memorize lines and recite them.
I want to think that most of the audience was just the FBI. Because who was actually going to see that play for real? It was family members of the people in it.
Yep, yep.
And then a bunch of feds in the back.
Yeah, and one poor tourist that got pulled in from the street or something. Oh, man.
Pretty interesting play that he chose to be into.
Maybe a surprising choice, or maybe not a surprising choice.
Maybe a poignant choice.
Because the message of that play is how people can believe one thing, and then it turns out what they thought they believed actually isn't true.
Right.
So while he's in the interrogation, the detectives, we talked to like three detectives, and even AC and J-Mank talk about it on Talking Dateline, where they're like, this guy, he thinks he's outsmarting us. He thinks he's the smartest person in the room. I don't think that's what Stephen Beale's doing. To me, that's not Stephen Beale's deal. He's got an audience, and he loves to hear himself talk.
Right.
Right? I don't think there's an evil, narcissistic, like, psychopath in there. I mean, he's a psychopath, obviously, because he's a killer, but I think he wants attention. Is what I think.
Yeah. And in the meantime, the cops try to dig up some evidence on him, and they take a look at the crime scene. They find a CVS branded 9-volt battery.
Yep.
Launched up into the ceiling. It looks like that would have come from the bomb itself. There were two other injured people at the scene.
Critically injured.
One said that Ildiko opened a box and that's when it went off.
That was shoebox-shaped.
Shoebox-shaped. She was able to describe it. The cops find surveillance of Stephen buying a box and buying a CVS-branded 9-volt battery all within a few days of this.
Yeah, on separate occasions, all kind of within where the bomb was blown up.
So right? They have some evidence. They don't really have a clear motive yet.
Well, no, because as he tells it, he's not a jilted lover. He's still in a great relationship.
And he's got a new girlfriend who he loves.
Okay. So the cops want a motive, but by all accounts, on the surface, Stephen is happily in a new relationship with this woman named Valerie. I mean, he's happily in love with this new woman, so why would he need to kill Ildiko, is what his defense is, right? There's a point where they arrest him when they find that in his garage, but then they get the stuff tested, and it could technically be used to set a rocket off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they had to let him go. And he gets picked up in jail from his girlfriend Valerie of 1 month. So let's talk about Valerie, because this poor girl, we see her at 2 points in her life, both of which are rock bottom.
Valerie Stone and Stephen Beale were engaged. He gave her a ring, a diamond solitaire.
We'll see it.
A little over a carat.
Very nice.
It is.
Valerie, I understand Valerie. I understand that she, even though he was arrested 1 month into their relationship, she stood by him because I get it. I've been on those apps. I've been on those sites.
Yeah.
It's pretty bleak. And she found a nice guy who treats her well and makes her feel special. She said, yeah, he's probably innocent and has been wrongly accused. I'm going to stick by him. It's just that she continues to stick by him despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary.
Can we talk about Valerie, Valerie, Valerie?
Yeah, Valerie.
Oh, Valerie. I just wanted to shake her. Like, why are you staying with him?
Valerie is a tragic figure, and I feel for her so much because I feel like she's a good sport about it. Even, like, J-Mank's putting on the charm with her, that J-Mank charm where it's like, hey, I'm J-Mank. And she's kind of, like, we've seen it before where the ladies in a talking head will flirt with J-Mank. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we get it, girls. We get it.
The people I interview are not supposed to be more cynical than I am.
Sorry.
And Valerie was wanting the same kind of fun, but J-Mank was not here for it tonight, Caitlin. He was not having it with Valerie because he's so not into her sticking around.
Right. Yeah, he did not agree with her choices. Let's just say that.
When we first meet her, her introduction, J-Mank's VO is something like, some people find love and some people don't. Like Valerie here.
Listen, I felt bad for her by the end of this. He was brutal.
He
was brutal to her. And to the point where I even said out loud, bro, take it easy.
Yeah, I'll tell you when, foolish part.
Now, maybe that sounds like I'm desperate.
Desperate's not where I was going. Foolish might be where I was going.
Okay.
She starts dating this guy from this app, and she makes a big point of telling J-Mank, in my bio it says,
must not be stuck in the past or stuck on your ex or, you know, something like that. And because I was so tired of it.
You want to weed out those guys who can't move on.
Exactly. I mean, who wants to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't really want to be with you?
And I think, oh, girl, that's exactly what you signed up for and refused to unsign up for, right? He even says it on their first date. I mean, they go out on a first date, and the first thing he mentions is his ex that he's not hung up on. Oh, but he's just on a lease and runs a business with her, supposedly. Valerie, that should have been your sign to get out of there. He broke your number one Carter rule, right?
And right away, Stephen brought up Ildiko, his ex. Stephen told Valerie he and Ildiko were still business partners, but that was all.
Yeah, I'm friends with a lot of my exes, though.
Yes. However, in my very limited experience on the apps, because I'll download it, have no action, delete it in disgust, come back 7 months later.
That's the cycle.
Like it's meant to be done.
Yep.
Like it's meant to be done. If I see in a bio a lady who says, I do not like drama, I say, sorry, girl, you love drama.
Oh, yeah.
Pass.
If you didn't like drama, you wouldn't mention it at all.
Absolutely. And I feel like it was a self-actualizing thing where Valerie's like, I don't want anybody hung up on their ex. And she, in turn, gets the person who's most caught up on his ex because he's only dating to use her as a beard as cover because he's going to blow up his ex.
True.
And Valerie doesn't get this. A month she's dating this guy. He gets arrested, okay? So then she goes to pick him up when they release him. Picks him up in his prison jumpsuit, blah, blah, blah.
Valerie was there to take Stephen home, still wearing his jail-issue jumpsuit with his belongings in his hand.
They arrest him, like, what, that day or a few days later or something. And she stood by his side for 5 years. Caitlin. There was only a month where they were in public together.
And
like they've touched.
Remember what happened on their drive home from the jail?
The cops pulled
him over on the freeway to search her car for bombs.
Yeah.
And of course there's nothing in her car. She has no idea what's happening.
No, but she's there with a video ready to jump into Karen mode, wasn't she?
Even that, she was like, this is fine. This is fine.
Deputies searched their car, while Valerie hit record.
Those are posters. You can open them.
You're right, because that happened day 31 of their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So while the cops are investigating Steven, there's a point where they get to go out and Valerie, they can go on dates and whatnot. And they're going out for a weekend away. And before that weekend starts, Valerie gets approached. A black Suburban cuts her off. And it's the FBI. And they're like, get in. They go to a parking lot and talk. And they convince her she's got to wear a wire and let them put cameras in her hotel room to try and convince Steven to admit on camera that he did blow up Ildiko. And she agrees to do it.
Yeah.
Your boyfriend's thinking, this is great. We can leave all our troubles behind and have a nice weekend together. You're thinking, maybe I can get him to confess to a murder.
And she agrees to do it. And her point is, and J-Mac loves going, that wasn't a good weekend, was it?
You guys have a nice weekend?
No, we didn't really enjoy the weekend.
Perhaps because the itinerary was derailed.
And he didn't really incriminate himself at all.
Correct.
Because they didn't get jack sh-
Nope.
She played every angle that she could, and he still didn't bite. And J-Mank's example of why that could be was so f***ing funny is they cut to J-Mank, and he holds up his notebook, and it says, in black marker, I'm wearing a wire. He's like, you could have just held up this note. And she's like, I didn't, though. But that was hilarious. And that's how he started the talking dateline. AC starts cracking up. And she goes, for the listeners, Josh is holding up a notepad that says, I'm wearing a wire. And we are having some yucks.
Josh is, for those of you who can't see this, he is holding up a sign that says, I'm wearing a wire.
So then he's in jail for 5 years of trials. And she stayed with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, J-Mank presents to her, because J-Mank is like, this is the episode where J-Mank reveals that he lost 70 pounds. I teased this because my money had mentioned it. And he says, you know, a lot of things have changed between us. I lost 70 pounds, which is a little bit of a brag, but do it. Go on.
I went on a big diet. I lost 70 pounds.
What was his thing for her? Because his point was, the one thing that hasn't changed, you're still with this guy. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Here's something that didn't happen during those 897 days, which is you didn't break up with him. You guys are still together.
Mm-hmm. And she's, and this is, oh, I feel, I just feel.
This was heartbreaking.
This is why I feel for Valerie, because her response is, I know and I see the signs, but then I think he says he's innocent. And if he didn't do it, what am I passing up? Like, what does this have the potential to be?
It was kind of like, but if he's not guilty, where could this possibly go? How good could this be?
What could it possibly be that it's worth sticking around through this for?
Maybe he'll blow you up too.
Yeah. And she goes, I know that's naive. And J-Man goes, I was thinking foolish. And you could feel it drain from her face where she was like, oh, that was kind of mean.
I know. She kept taking these hits and you could see her face sort of struggle to smile it off.
She's wanting it to be jokey. She's really wanting it to be flirty jokey. And J-Mank is like, I'm sorry, I'm stonewalling that because you got to get the f*** out of there.
Because that point is the point where a lot of people might think to themselves, this is where I get off the Stephen Beale Express.
Yeah.
And here you are.
Do you think J-Mank was feeling cocky because he lost that weight? He was feeling himself and he started to just attack her?
You know what? Look, maybe. And I believe that was also a Mom Money suggestion. That's very possible. Look, you lose a lot of weight, you get a little bounce in your step. Maybe that's why he's a little spicy, because he was spicy in other times as well. Like when he reads to her face text that Steven wrote to Ildiko while they were together.
Those were texts Valerie hadn't seen. What came next wasn't pleasant for either of us.
He's like, so you still love Steven? And she says so. He's like, you still believe that, huh? Okay. And then he reads to her some texts from Steven to Ildiko when they were supposedly broken up that are all like lovey-dovey and like, I love you. I want to build a world with you.
Mm-hmm.
Basically proving to her on television that Steven's a lying f**k, right?
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of. I will love you forever. That was on April 22nd of 2018.
Oh, wow.
April 28th, he texts Ildiko, I'm also missing you.
That's a pretty mortifying way to receive that news.
And she tries to do her best to roll with it, and she can't. I mean, she gets teary.
She's like, that gives me something to think about.
Wow. That kind of makes me feel right now.
I'm sorry about that.
I really wanted to give her a hug right then and go, J-Mank, cut, cut.
I know, brutal.
You know what I love? I noticed watching this J-Mank episode is that when we're watching ones with AC or KM, their resting face is one of sadness or understanding or sorrow or, oh, go on. Please tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
J-Mank's resting face is, you don't expect me to believe this, do you? Right?
Yeah.
It's resting faces. I'm not buying it.
It's that Bill Hader impression of J-Mank.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you didn't do that, did you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's so sassy.
He always says you could have a drinking game with this every time he'll do this. He goes, so you found a dead. Now, most people, when they find a dead body in their house, they call 911. But you didn't do that, did you?
You're right. He brings a sass, and boy, you know what? We love to talk about AC outfits, but J-Mank said, AC, you're not the only Dateline correspondent with some mad flavor in his fashion game. Did you see his new watch? He had like an orange watch that was popping with an orange little pocket square.
Ever since he lost the weight, man. Like, he's always had good sneaks. He's got that fade. He is feeling himself.
Yeah. Okay, so this murder happens in 2018. The first trial is 5 years later, 2023. Hung jury. How'd you feel about that hung jury? I was shocked.
I was too. Typically, I'm the one who says, well, there was reasonable doubt, but this doesn't really seem like there's reasonable doubt.
No. J-Mank's like, so did you guys plan on coming for round two? And they're like, oh yeah, we're not giving this up. And I feel that because they're probably like, this was a gimme. Like, there's no reason Stephen Beal should not be able to put that foot in his mouth until he's locked up in jail, right? As a prosecutor, you got to look at Stephen Beal and go like, this chatty Cathy, if I can't nail him down for saying something stupid, then I shouldn't even be a DA. Now that we're well into the episode today, are you ready for me to drop that bomb?
Is that the right choice of words for this episode?
That's funny.
Boom.
All right, here it goes, Caitlin. Stephen Beal, you'll know, they talked about how he was a grandpa, a previous wife, and kids. Turns out his wife had an accidental death.
Sure.
Caitlin.
Oh, sure. Classic.
They were carrying a giant dresser down the steps, and she was on the bottom, and she tripped, and he fell with the dresser on top of her. Now, she survived that, okay? But she died from complications in the hospital a few weeks later. So not only were there complications due to the injury sustained in the fall, there's also lead in her system.
Hmm.
What do you make of that?
I think he was poisoning her.
Yeah, I mean, is lead one of those things that's in everybody's system? It's just a matter of how much it is?
Well, maybe. We all have Teflon in our blood.
Yeah, or like the famous, like, you know, everything has radiation. I was looking at old ads from this 70s advertisement book that I have. They were trying to sell nuclear energy in the 70s, right? There were all these ads of like, everything has radiation in it, from the dirt to your fingertips. Like trying to make America feel safe with nuclear energy.
And then Chernobyl happened.
Well, and specifically Three Mile Island happened too. But yeah, Chernobyl, what up? You know we gotta watch that on a Patreon tier, right?
I would love to.
Yeah. It's been a few years. I haven't watched it in a few years. You know how we love that show.
We
love Chernobyl. Okay.
Perfect. 10 out of 10.
So Stephen Beal, the number one suspect in this case, has a previous death on his hands that was ruled an accident. But like, J-Mank is like, we didn't include this in the show because it doesn't go anywhere, which made me think of you. Again, another high five you can give to J-Mank, where it's like, that might be interesting, but your belief is if it doesn't have anything to do with the final verdict, like, why do we need to see it? Like, he had to sue to get the insurance, but he won.
It would still be nice to know.
Yeah.
I get that the jury doesn't need to know, but Dateline viewers can certainly know.
And they played a clip where his daughter is talking about that. Because J-Mank is like, is there any suspicion there? And she's like, none whatsoever. Nobody's ever suspected it. It's kind of crazy, huh?
The stronger person always goes down the staircase first when you're carrying something.
Yeah.
Because the weight of the object is on them.
Yeah, you're leading the ship.
Why would he put his wife at the bottom unless he wanted her to die?
It's a great theory. Yeah. That's what the insurance company thought. And they were like, we're not giving you this money. And Stephen Beal said, I'm taking you to court and I'm going to prepare. Because another thing he did, they're looking at his Google and he's searching, can narcissists beat lie detectors? And his lawyer says, well, that's because he was studying for a role.
What role? Show us the role.
Prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds pretty fishy to me. Because there were two searches about, like, can you beat it? How do you beat it? And whatnot.
Yeah, you wouldn't need that You wouldn't need to do that research for an audition.
No. What is it with defendants whose lawyer gets them a hung jury and then they don't keep that same lawyer for the next trial and then they lose? It's got to be a scheduling thing, right? Like, he had to have wanted to stay with the hung jury people.
Right.
Which was the muscle guy. Which was the Muscle Beach guy with the beard. They had him do a little walk up to the courthouse. And it was like, gee, I wonder if this guy works out. The like buttons were about to shoot off. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yo, you lift, bro?
He's waiting. That's the vibe he had when he was doing his walking, was waiting to answer that question.
Mr. Beal is a warm, funny, kind of quirky older man.
So are we onto the lists, I wonder? You got anything on your... Oh! J-Mank, great, hilarious line. When the boring detective goes, he thought he outsmarted us. Cut to J-Mank. Perfect delivery. Wrong again.
I think he thinks he's outsmarting everybody.
Wrong again.
That's good. That's good stuff.
J-Mank f***s.
J-Mank f***s, absolutely. All right, so Caitlin, hit me with your list.
Kate's unnamed list. It is not a small town. It's Orange County, California.
Yep.
There's no Florida connection, not that we know of. And no military either.
No.
And nobody cried and said, I'm sorry. So that's a big goose egg for me this week.
Kurtz! Kick-ass list!
Kick-ass list! Kick-ass list!
My list. No signs of a struggle, but my list was popping off today in relation to movies, TV, and Dateline. And I've got opinions on all of it. J-Mank's the one who talks about movies, which I thought was pretty cool. He's like, maybe I just watch a lot of movies, and then that's when he does his holds up the
I'm wearing a wire
thing.
Okay, it's possible I've seen too many movies, but maybe there was a reason for Steven not taking the bait.
Right, so that's pretty sweet. Another movie mention. Stupid lawyer talks about movies. You know, it sounds good and it makes for great TV, but it's just not the truth. I hate it when they pull that. And Muscle Man did that.
One of the themes is that Mr. Beal was a jilted ex-lover. It's a nice soundbite. It's great for TV. But the evidence directly refuted that.
It's similar to, it's like a bad movie.
Absolutely, it's just like that. Oh, the Dateline mention. A few weeks ago, we had a stinker or not stinker, depending on whose side you were on. But we did love Murph Dog's throat a commercial with a cliffhanger. Remember that?
That was solid.
But before we get there, I like cliffhangers.
So do we.
That was a point for Murph Dog. And this is not a point for J-Mank, but it's not his fault. But Dateline gets a mention and it's used in a throat a commercial. And I don't think it works in the slightest. The friend of Ildiko goes, it's not over. I watch Dateline. Everything has an end. And this wasn't at the end yet. And then J-Mank says, she's right.
Because if you watch Dateline, there's always an end. And that wasn't it.
Oh, she's right.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense. Yeah, you're right. Everything has an end. It also has a middle and a beginning. That's what a thing is. Right?
I see what you're saying.
What she's trying to say is, I watch Dateline. There's always another level to it or something. Anyway, it's list worthy. It's a stinker, but it made that list. So I'm counting it. This is our first bomb case, is it not?
I think so.
We kind of had a bomb with Jason Steadman, the jet skier from Canada. He kind of had a bomb where that car blew up because he set it on fire or whatever.
Right, but no one was injured.
This is the first time we've had a bomb kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that, where the reason why I knew it was this motherfucker from the jump is because who else could it possibly be? There's someone in her life that she doesn't want to be with anymore who knows how to make bombs and makes videos about it. And then she dies by bomb. Steve-O, you fucking moron. It doesn't matter how good this bomb is, dude. We know it was you.
Yeah.
Who else could it possibly be?
It wasn't Elizabeth.
Yeah. So anyway, Steve is locked up in prison for life. He's probably like putting on a show right now. He's probably talking about acting, holding court. And I hope he is.
He might even be organizing a performance in the jail.
Yeah, I think he might be.
Community theater, prison theater. It's all the same to him.
Boom. They were definitely putting on shows in Oz. So it's possible. They're putting on productions in prison.
They were putting on some kind of show in Oz.
Yeah, they were.
I'm talking about dicks and butts.
That's true. And Luke Perry in Cement Walls.
Your followers are tickled to death. You're helping me build this wall.
Help me!
On that note, I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
Okay, good. Oh, got them bringing stuff out. Ooh.